What's up, guys? This is Tyler Babin, and welcome to a new episode of Tuesday Morning Coffee. Though, to be honest, I'm not sure if I should actually call this a completely new episode, as the interview you're about to listen to with Chase Jarvis was actually recorded almost 6 months ago. Chase and Creative Live invited me out to Seattle. We made some videos together. I did a feature on Chase's podcast, and then the interview I shot with Chase for the video, the full uncut thing that you're listening to right now, was sort of lost in the mix, and I just stumbled back across this a couple days ago, re-listened to it, and was blown away with just like how solid this conversation is. I took a ton away from it, and I was the person hosting the interview, just re-listening to it, so I think you guys are going to take a massive amount from it. I'm not going to say too much. I think Chase and I kill it on this one. This is Tuesday Morning Coffee with Chase Jarvis.
All right, we're good on sound.
Good on sound. All right.
Chase.
Hi.
Thank you.
I'm happy.
This is incredible.
It's such
an insane full circle moment. So I don't even know if we've like talked this, but you were like one of the core reasons I became a photographer.
I love hearing that. That
means a lot to me. It's funny, I was trying to, last night I was sitting in my hotel and I was trying to deconstruct where I was first introduced to you, and I think I landed on it this morning.
Okay, this is good.
The Nikon D90 video.
Wow.
Where you like taped up the cameras and everything.
Yeah.
I rewatched it this morning because that was like the first camera I ever experimented with.
Yeah, that was the first time that, it was the first camera that was a video DSLR.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That you could shoot video with before anything that Canon had, and without going into the weeds, they asked if I would shoot the campaign. You know, I had to go over there into Tokyo and talk with them, and they're like, okay, here's the camera, you know, big reveal, just like the movies, like 10 Japanese men in dark suits seated when they hand me the camera. I have to give them, tell them my impression, and they go through all the specs. I'm like, okay, cool, it's just another camera. I mean, it's a nice camera. And then they say, oh, and it also shoots video. And I was like,
whoa.
Because it shoots video. And they're like, yeah, it's not very good, though. We don't want to talk about that feature. I was like, no, you do, because that's the future of photography. Yeah. It's photographers are going to be able to shoot video, and instead of that camera that used to cost $100,000 to have that, you know, big fancy piece of like 2.8 or 1.4 glass, now you can do that in a $1,000 camera. And they're like, yes. And I said, we have to make a video about me shooting the campaign, and they literally were like, Chase-san, very dangerous. Is literally what the guy said.
That's so good.
So anyway, that was the first video. That was really one of the first behind the scenes videos that existed.
Well, the cool thing is, like, and I looked back at it, I think it was uploaded in 2009. Mm-hmm. And so you were sort of at the beginning of this whole like wave of behind the scenes YouTube content, everything. What sort of drew you to like wanting to be so public and just throwing things out there?
It came from my desire to learn, honestly, because when I dropped everything everybody else wanted from me, you know, my parents and friends and schools and teachers and counselors, everyone has a plan for you. Mm-hmm. And it's the same is still true today. It's less so true, but, you know, college wants you to do this, your grandparents want you to do this, all the people around you are telling you what to do. And I, after some, like a lot of frustrating years internally, it was a good life, don't get me wrong, everything was good, but like I basically had to disappoint all those people and go do the thing that I wanted to do, which was to become a photographer.
Yeah.
And when I did that, I like bailed on medical school and professional soccer and a bunch of stuff to do this thing. First of all, it rocked everybody in my personal world. They were like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Second of all, there was no information. It was really, really, really early internet, and like just email basically. And there's no information. And so I was, you know, frustrated by that. I mean, literally going to the library and shit.
Yeah.
Like, and so when these emerging opportunities to share what I was doing, it was really trying to entice other people to share. Not that I like knew anything, I didn't want to represent being the expert.
Yeah.
And the hope was that other people would reciprocate. And also you can kind of see, that's my job, I think as an entrepreneur, to see around the corner. Mm-hmm. And I could see that, wait a minute, okay, if information is free and wants to move quickly, like this is inescapable. People, and a lot of photographers, it was a very closed system. Like everyone was protective of their clients, protective of their techniques. And I looked at the internet and said, okay, all this is gonna be, like you're trying to like hold water.
Yeah.
You know, it's gonna all move much too quickly. And so I started leaning into the thing that I saw was the future. and it was very, very frowned upon at first. It was very, really, it was against the tide. And soon enough, though, when those a few key things happened, like it was Google Video then before YouTube, and you could upload a 10 minute video. Vidler, Gary knows about Vidler. Like these really, really early platforms started to open up. I could see that that was going to be the new future. So I just doubled down on it. And the D90 video, it really was one of the first where using the product to make a thing.
The actual campaign. Yeah,
yeah. And then telling a story about it. So that sort of meta thing, it was literally that was the first time that had that was done.
Yeah. So I'm going to kind of like go off
on
a tangent
for
a second.
I get it.
Because I love hearing like the you having to like disappoint a lot of people and family because our stories sound very similar in the upfront. I dropped out of college and went very much against the grain. I think my family was way less rocked because I was, and similar to Gary World, like fourth grade, I was like, you know what, this is just not how it's going to work.
You knew early,
I pretty
right?
much, I like mentally checked out in middle school. And I get tons of questions of people that like kids are like, I want to drop out. I want to go chase my dream. I want to do this, but family, but family, but family. How do you, what sort of finally made you make that decision to sort of have to turn your back for a split second on everything and go with what was in your heart?
It was a very strong internal conflict. It was a very powerful conflict that like, of course, you respect, or I have had a really good relationship with my parents, you know, other folks in my life, and you respect these people, but I think what's trained out of us is the sort of relationship we have with our intuition.
Yeah.
We're like, no, the intuition, like, this is not valid or valuable. So there's a huge internal conflict, and it was really starting to come to terms with, wait a minute, there's... Like this conflict, it feels like it feels very unnatural. And so what would it be like if I just went with the flow instead of tried to swim upstream? And to be clear, like I mean, I came from a lower middle class economically. I was not an immigrant. I'm born white male, so there's plenty of privilege. And that's one of the things that I remember remarking, like, wait a minute. If this is super hard for me to figure out, I mean, I did have upside down Nikes and Adidas with four stripes and stuff like that. Like I was not at all well off, but like I didn't want for much. And this conflict in me was real. And so I started listening to it and just realized that, look, you really do have sort of one chance. Yeah. And a lot of it came to fruition around my parents wanting me to go to medical school. And they wanted me to go to medical school because I said, oh, I guess if you're hardworking and smart, and I was the first person in my family to go to college, so like I got to make people proud, and I'm in the middle of that, and it's like, this completely sucks. I'm the only person that is, you know, I'm completely like, unlike everybody else, everyone loves this shit, I hate it. Really wrestling with that. And when I would sort of fantasize about doing the thing that I loved, or when I would tap into it, week after graduating college, my grandfather died, and I was given his cameras right before I had sort of saved up money and when I was going to go to Europe. And so I was just given this camera. And when I did that, that felt so good. So it was really the doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big, like, if you're wrestling with what's inside you and you tap into the thing that sounds interesting to you, and if it goes from like pushing a rock uphill to just feels like you're, you know, floating downhill, then there's something in there. And the fact that we're taught to ignore those feelings, I think is A, catastrophic culturally. It makes people sick and tired and creates a lot of bad things in our culture. And just early on, it was the act of doing plus listening to my intuition made it feel very natural. And when you knew what it felt like, when you actually finally decided, you're like, oh my God, this is like, the idea of learning something took on a totally different meaning. It wasn't like this fourth grade, you're like, this sucks. You're like, I want to stay up all night.
You become addicted to it,
I want to stay up all night and learn everything I can. I want to go practice. And so once I tapped into that, I think it's a pretty natural feeling. And then just listening to that intuition is a big deal.
And it worked out.
Yeah. It worked out.
To have a pretty incredible career as a photographer and shoot for some of the best known brands in the world. And so The thing that I think is really interesting is before we started filming, we're talking in, you know, the late 90s, the first sort of American photographer to contribute to Red Bull. You've watched a lot change in this world.
Yeah.
And now we're reaching this really interesting point where it's Instagram famous. Every kid in middle school that was my age wants to be a YouTuber and make online videos. And it's really cool to be having this moment where like photography and video and everything, everyone's really excited about it. But it's not just sitting on a beach with a camera living a fun lifestyle. And you know, over the last few years of me sort of finding my way through this process and working with Gary and doing all these things, I was just like, everyone thinks it's sitting on a beach with a camera having a fun lifestyle.
Totally.
You know?
I get it.
And so I'm curious, you know, your point of view, what does it mean today in your thought to kind of be an influencer and to have an online audience? What is this thing that everyone wants, but no one really knows what to do with it or how to achieve it?
You know Brandon Stanton, Humans of New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Super good friend. I think he said it best, so I'll pull on his. Like, pursuing your dreams, the thing you love or are passionate about, want to do more than anything else, is not an excuse to not work hard.
Yeah.
And what I feel like I want to coach people away from is, like, just taking just enough pictures to be able to say that you're a photographer, but not really going anywhere or doing anything with it. I think the reality is, and for people that are, if there's someone that you're crazy passionate about, you love their work, their ethos, what they stand for, their values, how they put themselves out there, I promise you, they work their asses off. And so, you know, if you don't let pursuing your passions be an excuse for not having to work hard, and you actually aspire to do, again, this thing that I've been saying for a long time, and Gary also says that, if you want a sort of 1% life, like, you have to have a 99.999% effort, and it I think it blows, you know, blows the doors off what anybody imagines the actual amount of work that goes into it. And I have one other little dart to throw in there, which is like the concept of being like desiring to be an influencer for influencer's sake.
Yeah.
Is a very, very short, quick path to not finding success.
Yeah.
Everybody who I look up to, admire, respect, my peers, friends, people who are ahead of me in the game, people who are coming up, the people who I think do it from a place of where they really actually care about a thing and they involve themselves in that thing, for me it was photography. Mm-hmm. And it was ironic that those are the same tools that you used to tell your story. Mm-hmm. And so there was a really interesting, cool meta synergy there that we just talked about. Yep. For Gary, at first it was wine.
Yeah.
Like, neither of us woke up and said, I want to be like the most awesome person on the internet. You said, I'm crazy passionate about wine. I'm crazy passionate about photography, or fill in the blank for you filmmaking. And so, like, the desire to be an influencer, to me, like, if you're thinking about it in those terms, you've already lost.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you actually, so if you want to bake cakes, like, be the best cake maker in the world, and then tell a story about what it is that you're doing to pursue your passion.
Yeah.
So, as you're telling, I found it really interesting when we were talking, you just mentioned that you're trying to pull the covers back on that and show people that the pursuit of these things, of influence, the pursuit of influence is really a pursuit of something that you care deeply about, such that when shit gets hard, and I promise it will, 100%, whether that's building a business, online following, or anything, it will get so hard. You better love it. You better decide that, because what it really amounts to is outlasting 99% of the people, and when shit gets hard and 99 other people decide that they've had enough, that you just keep going.
Yeah.
That is a huge differentiator.
Yeah. I love that. So it all starts with passion. It's like the question I literally get the most, especially is like, I'm starting to have a little bit of a moment where like traction's building and like, like the audience is starting to come. People are like, how are you doing it? How are you building it?
Yeah.
Like, how do I get the numbers? And I'm like, you're starting from completely the wrong place.
So let me flip the script. What is it that you're passionate about? Why did you apply to get the Adobe Residence? Why, like, what is it? Is it storytelling? I guess I'll stop putting words in your mouth. But what is it? Like, what did you care about?
You nailed it. It's storytelling.
Yeah.
Like, at its core. the thing. And I came from, like, I was a photographer first, and mm-hmm. then video just kind of took over my world in the last yep. few years. But there's something I love about this device and its ability to, like, capture a moment in yep. time and freeze that and then be able to build out a story. And I can tell whatever story I want to tell.
Right.
You know? So, and so for me, it's just sort of imaginations going crazy all the time.
Yeah, you're validating the point that I'm trying to make, which is your passion about storytelling. Again, you have there's the nice benefit yeah. that the tools mm-hmm. are also the tools that help you share that story
yeah.
In a place where a lot of people can find it. But the same is true for anything. Like, I don't care if it's needlepoint or if it's, you know, building a wine business or, you know, any other myriad of things.
Yeah.
Like, if you have, it's pulling on that thread that will get you the thing that I think ultimately it's nice to be to have the things that you do be seen by a lot of people mm-hmm. if you are doing the things that you're supposed to be and that you like to be doing. Imagine yeah. if people like got to see the ugliest parts of your life. That would not be any fun for anybody. So yeah. you might as well pursue the thing that you yeah. are that you care about.
And I think the thing that's cool though is take away all the numbers, take away everything,
yep.
that all the eyes that are on the work, you still love taking pictures.
100%. I you walked in here with a camera.
Exactly. Like, that's still at its core, like, that's the thing you care about and yep. you're trying to push.
For sure.
And so it's always like finding that internal thing.
Yeah, and it's like it's I find it a little bit interesting. I go back to some of the first time that Gary and I spent together. He was a wine dude, and I was like, it wasn't to me, it was like, I like wine, but it was like, oh, that's cool. The guy's like carving out his own thing in wine. And that's, I had a much larger following than Gary at the time when he was building the wine thing.
Yeah.
And we connected literally online. I don't remember who reached out to who first, but doesn't matter. It was yeah. like, cool, that you're doing a cool thing. Oh, you're doing a cool thing. Hey, and I had a live internet show. And he came on the live internet show, and I remember him saying, like, dude, this is cool. Because he was, you know, starting to do the Wine Library TV yeah. thing.
So this was earlier than the CJ Live and the garage?
Yeah.
Is that previous? Yeah. I don't know what this is.
Yeah, this was, I don't know, I think it was his first book.
Wow.
Okay. And I just remember, like, I really enjoy, mm-hmm. like, I'm at pretty. I'm very tired right now. So normally I have more energy.
Yeah,
fresh off a flight from London just an hour ago. But I just remember, like, similar energy. Yeah. Love the energy, the vibe, passion around telling stories and serving a community. We started seeing that we were seeing the world the same, you know, the same way. And yeah. I don't know what year that was, maybe say 2009 or something, maybe 10, 9, doesn't mm-hmm. matter. I'd had a full-time video person working mm-hmm. for me since 2005.
Wow.
So you talked about, you've yeah. seen a lot.
Of course.
Like, it was totally radical. Like yeah. I was a photographer and I was not getting paid to make videos. I hired a video person to tell stories about the process of taking pictures. In 2005, and everyone thought I was completely bonkers.
Yeah.
But it was, again, early putting videos out on the internet that, as much as my photography was like, who's this guy? And it was equal, like, that's awesome, and fuck that guy. You know, it was yeah. one part both, which was fine. The only thing that you don't want to be is to get, you know, to have someone say nothing.
For sure.
And, but I think it's interesting that there's. It was very raw, and just because I don't want to talk like an old guy, like, yeah. You know, Gary and I both, we frown on that. But I guess to your original question, have seen a lot, but it definitely stems from pulling on the thread of whatever it is that you're excited about.
Yeah.
Gary's a shining example, and it was cool that you got to, you know, work with him, find the thing that you wanted to do, go do that thing, and now here you are.
Yeah.
So how did you do it, right? If you're pulling the covers back on influence,
yeah,
you jumped into the thing.
Yeah, I got
action, not intellect.
Yeah, action. It's doing and then finding sort of the closest, getting as close as you can to someone who you admire doing it to, like, really siphon
totally
their thoughts and ideas, and then you get to peel away and kind of do your thing.
Yeah, there's a guy that worked for me for 11 years. He 17, living in Brazil, moved to, like, saw my shit on the internet, mm-hmm. moved to Florida, worked in the dishwasher at an Italian restaurant for a year to save up enough money to fly to Seattle to show up anytime I made any sort of public appearance.
Yeah.
He was there. He, like, turned in books, turned in just basically showered our studio with gifts that he was making, not in a weird, creepy way, but just always present. And did that for about a year. So we're talking like 3 years scheming to just, like you point, get yourself close. And then we had an internship, so then he was an unpaid intern, and then he was a paid intern, then he was a part-time employee, and now he's, you know, been with the company, and now Creative Live for 10, 11, 12 years.
Yeah.
Get close to the things that you care about.
So, on the note of Creative Live,
that's
where we're sitting. I want to talk a little bit about reinventing yourself, I think, as people are starting to sort of talk to the world and be very public about things. There's always this decision on when you can change lanes. And obviously Gary did it and went from wine guy to, he's just, I don't even know what box to put Gary in at this point. He's you know, sort of mastered the art of it. And coming from, you know, photographer, which you still are at your core, but now we're sitting in this incredible building and we're kind of repaving the way of creative education. So give me the story.
I think it's I'm gonna be really clinical about it for a second, and then we can be abstract. In the most clinical sense, when you, the ability of mastering anything, it doesn't matter if you're mastering, you're a master sommelier, or you master ditch digging, or home building, or cooking, anything. If you truly master something, what you do in that process is you learn how you learn. And there's so many similarities in learning to master anything that you can then deconstruct those things and very easily then apply them to other things. And you see this with, this is one of the reasons that I think like Gary's had a lot of success in other ways. I've been able to move over to, you know, be an entrepreneur, be a video director, be, you know, whatever, move into other, Tim Ferriss, you know, New York Times bestseller, world class salsa dancer, whatever his list of stuff is. And you know, Gwyneth Paltrow with what other Gwyneth is working on, whatever, is the idea, the concept of learning, and this is your 10,000 hours or whatever, when you actually master something. That means not just know the material, but you're completely fluent frontwards, backwards. You don't have to think about taking a picture, shooting a video. The story instantly comes in your mind. That's like, and it's not an old guy with a beard on a mountaintop. That's not mastery, right? It's it's just knowing whatever your craft is front to back. When you've done that with one thing, it's infinitely easier to lift and stamp because there's a lot of the traits. The content is going to be very different, but the traits, who do I surround myself with? Where do I go? Where's the scene? Who do I admire? Where do I get my information from? How do I deconstruct the best people in the world? What are they doing? How do I emulate them? You basically create a pattern and you learn how you learn, and then you can reapply that. So that's the technical part is whether people talk about that overtly or not, that's actually what's happening. That's the mechanic. And that's why I find that most people want to be like 70% at 100 things, which is totally cool. But I'm a big advocate of way over investing on one thing, and then it makes other things easier.
Got it.
So to me, that was photography. And, and you, if you're wondering if you're a master at something, you're not. You know, and that, that's just a, that's a blunt answer. And for a long time, I was like, I don't know. And even when I was getting master's in, you're the Hasselblad master. I'm like, I still got, I'm not a master.
No idea
I'm
what
still
you're
figuring, I'm like, looks good from the outside, crazy as shit in here. But at some point where everything becomes effortless, you know, athletes talk about the game happening in slow motion where, you know, Michael Jordan talked about, he could see around the corner, he could, you know, whatever. That's mastery. And when you achieve that, you know it. You don't have to run around saying, I'm a master. But that gives you basically a blueprint for how to do it again. And so for me, I think that's how I made the leap into, you know, starting, what first was a best camera, which is the iPhone app of the year in 2019. First app that allowed you to take a picture, add a cool effect, and then share it. Sounds pretty familiar. I ended up getting my ass kicked by Instagram 2 years later when they raised $50 million and I didn't want to raise any money. But like, I was able to lift and stamp, and I think that's actually the blueprint that you see a lot of these folks who are making a lot of progress in their worlds. Used Gary as an example. And it's the information age. Like, we're in an area, like, that's why four-year schools, not like college can be valuable. But college doesn't go at the pace that those things, you know, you can put, if you can put 10,000 hours in a year, whatever. Don't make me do math right now.
I'm right there.
But like the concept is that they have created like the 4-year institution covered with ivy on the hill. Mm-hmm. It's not set up for aggressive, in-depth learning at an accelerated rate from the best people, deconstructing what works and eliminating what doesn't. Like those institutions, they're physical. Mm-hmm. They're disincentivized to provide that fast learning because then they can't charge you as much money. There's a lot of ways that those institutions are disincentivizing what looks like the modern era, right? It used to be we had a job and you worked it for 40 years, you got a gold watch. The way I say it is my parents had one job, I will have five, or one career, I will have five careers, and you will have five careers at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is, right. I mean, and that's because we are able to learn, the environment for learning information is moving a lot more quickly than it ever has before. So mm-hmm. I think it's a very powerful thing. We're all hyphens, and get used to that. Like, if you think about what your residency is, like, it's, sure, you're video storytelling, mm-hmm. but you said earlier, like, I wake up in the morning, like, I gotta figure out what to do, right? Am I gonna shoot this kind of video or that kind of video? And I also have to be able to, I don't know if you're reporting back to Adobe, I need to, balance my checkbook, you need to be good at least 10 things.
Yeah.
And to me, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. It differentiates this time that we're in right now from all others, because that you used to never be able to do that.
Yeah.
Sorry, I feel like
No.
I'm enthusiastic about this, and I want to ask you another question, if
please.
I can. So, I'm going to reference what I just mentioned, and that's you have to wake up in the morning and decide. It's almost like there's too much freedom right now that you've got this residency. And if you pair that question with your first one, how you you're open, like you're passionate about something.
Yeah.
And it's very easy. And a lot of people when I get off stage or whatever, that they online, like, what do I do?
Yeah.
And like, it's no joke. It's real. So what are you doing to manage that? Because I think that's like, there's like, oh God, I got to do this. I got to do 50 things.
Yeah.
And then what that equals is no action.
Yeah.
So what are you doing?
It's so funny. And it's like, I feel like I'm talking to myself in some ways. Like one of the first videos I made coming into the residency was like, just start, just like pick up a camera and go film something.
And then here you are stuck.
That'll like natively maybe kind of get you there. But there's been so many days of, coming out of Gary's world, it was very, very strict and rigorous, and there was always the thing that I knew I had to do. Coming into the Adobe world, all of a sudden I'm in the situation where, like, I really don't have to make a video this week, and, like, I'm still getting paid next week, and so, like, cool, what do I do? There's, like, way too many options.
Yep.
So I've been trying to really put myself in more of a box, which is ironic whenever every creative in the world says, don't put me in a box, don't put me in a box. I'm like, put me in a fucking box immediately.
Totally.
Then I have walls to bounce off of.
Yep.
But it's interesting. I'm actually curious, like, what piece of advice you'd give me to continue on that path and narrowing in to actually find the...
Just action. I mean, I know that you can't focus on me when I'm that close, but like, just do anything.
Yeah.
Because when you start doing something, you'll realize, is this the right thing or the wrong thing?
Right.
Because again, we got that sensor in there that if we're trained to ignore, and I'm suggesting that you pay attention to it, it's the most powerful thing that you've got.
Yeah.
And every, all of your life experience is baked into, that's why it's not here. It's not cerebral. You're like, it's called a gut feeling.
Yeah.
But doing something instead of nothing. And creating constraints, actually creating a schedule for yourself. I was exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. I dropped out of graduate school and said, oh my God, I'm free. I finally told all the people in my life that I was gonna go do this thing and I'm doing it. And now it's like, creativity is just when it strikes, I'm gonna listen to it. And
then it never strikes.
Yeah, it doesn't strike. Well, whatever, I think it's Picasso, like it shows up when you're working.
Yeah.
So I'm a huge fan of actually creating some rigor around the thing you're doing. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna put out a video a week, two a week, whatever your thing is.
Yeah.
And it's a schedule that you can stick to. And to me, that makes all the difference in the world. Excuse me, because you don't actually, if you're not making anything, then inspiration is not going to come. And if inspiration doesn't come and you decide that you're not going to make anything until inspiration comes, you're screwed.
Yeah.
So I think your opening video about just start, here you are. right? And you're making a video, and when you wake up in the morning, you're like, gosh, I don't know what I should do today. Just do something. And it's that act of doing that will give you the next step. You don't have to create a, like, it's a certain personality type. I want to see the whole plan. I want to see the whole staircase. I want to, you don't have to see the whole staircase. You just have to see the next step. Or it's nice to one time be able to see two or three. The reality is when you're making a lot of work, like, volume of work matters, especially if you're trying to tap into your personal style. Mm-hmm. That's actually the number one thing as a professional. Not everyone wants to be a professional creator, but if you do, everyone's like, oh, how do I guess my personal style? I don't know. And it's like, you know,
how do you find your voice?
Literally, how do you find your voice? And the only way to do it, you cannot think your way into your voice. You literally have to make 1,000 things.
Yeah.
And when you start making things without overanalyzing it, just doing what feels natural, it's only through that process that you'll actually be able to find it. And if you don't know if you have one, then you don't have a style.
Yeah.
So get back to work, kind of thing. And I think that's a very, and you might want to, you know, you can see what you want to make in your mind's eye, and then there's what you can make.
Yeah.
Ira Glass calls that the creative gap. But you only reduce the creative gap through honing your skills, and you only hone your skills through making. It's just like shooting free throws or whatever sports analogy you want to use.
Yep.
It's the doing.
I think that's kind of a perfect note to end on. My last thing, and you know, at its core, like, this whole series is what's that second layer that allows your life to be possible. And so I'm curious, in your mind, what do you think the biggest misconception in your own brand is of what the highlight reel looks like versus what's actually happening?
Oh man, I think that that's a good question. I think that it's the gap between what it looks like and what it feels like. And it's a really big gap. And when, I think it's very, it feels cliche. I've said it a lot. I think, you know, again, I kept referencing Gary because that's the world you've just sort of left, is that if you can silence or mute in some way the voice of the critic, your own critic, and the critics that are out there in the world, that's how you are able to reduce the gap. When you're actually making all the things that you want to make and you're telling yourself the right stories, it's a mental game.
Yeah.
And I think mindset is a huge, huge aspect of life, let alone like being a creator.
Yeah.
But I think we can say especially as a creator, because you know, you identify with the work you make and you put it out there. Sometimes it's crickets, sometimes it blows up.
Yeah.
The difference between what people see and what it feels like to actually be creating, there's a big gap there. And I like to try and reduce that gap by like ignoring the voices that aren't your own.
Yep.
And to me, that's everyone who I think is, let's talk about Casey for a second. Just start making videos every day. That's a huge level of effort.
Yeah.
And I think if you haven't done that, like, that is basically, and Casey was an accomplished storyteller before he started, you know, daily blogging.
Yep.
He had his own HBO show. And even at that level, instead of like sitting back, what did he do? He stepped forward and made videos every day. And so like that it harkens back to five things we've talked about in the last 15 minutes here, which he only found his voice through making, and he was able to hone that voice. And what you saw from the outside of Casey's perfect life, you realized if you followed him long enough, and you know, he got the videos, you know, number however many thousands, and he started saying like, this is hard.
Yeah.
Here's I'm having problems in my relationship with my wife because the like being a YouTuber is getting in the way of actually my personal relationships. And I don't know. I think there's a real gap there, and you can only really figure it out by stepping into it.
Chase,
can I ask you a couple questions?
Please,
before we go?
Okay, please,
so,
please.
So I want to recap for me because I don't actually know the full story of how you're here. Just give me like the 90-second version.
Cool. Okay.
Because I read it in an email or I saw the video.
Yep.
But just galvanize it for me. Cool. You came to a class here.
So I picked up a camera when I was like 10 years old and was always
Southern
like
D90 video
playing around with it. And then when I started getting more serious and I started going to like online resources, I stumbled into Creative Live and then found you and sort of went down this deep rabbit hole.
Got it.
And so this is 8 years ago, whenever it is not nearly as the built young out Babin. As it is now.
Ah, young Babin.
I actually found, and this is when to come sit in as a class, you had to like submit a video and portfolio, and it was a
before we were making 50 right. a month or whatever. Yeah, we were just making one at a time.
And so I made a video, and I recently found that video, and it's hilarious. It's so cringy to actually look back at it.
But amazing. You should insert it here.
Right there. So I somehow convinced my parents. I mean, I had just finished high school. I had no money. Somehow convinced parents to fly me to Seattle for these 3 days so I could hang out and do this workshop around photography. And I don't think they understood it, but they were supportive. And that was with Matthew Jordan Smith. Yep. And that was, we actually met for like a split second. You were like passing through.
Was it in this building? It was in this building.
It was in Studio A. Yeah. Okay. And we shook hands, and you and Matthew kind of had a conversation. And then at the end of that workshop, Matthew looked at me and he's like, "You need to move to New York." And I was like, okay. And so that sort of set me down the path of figuring out how to move to New York. And so I'm working, I'm like living in Florida at this time, I'm building out my portfolio, and then the CJ Live of you and Gary comes up one day.
Yeah, you're like, I like this guy.
I'm like, Gary seems interesting. And so had started following him online, and then stumbled into a graphic design internship at Vayner. And I wasn't a graphic designer, I was a photographer, but I was like, I'll learn it.
Totally. But you see, like that's like doing whatever you can to get close to it, right?
Yeah, and so, Gary and I ended up meeting in the halls a few months in, ended up on his team, sort of followed that route nonstop, and then, you know, that was for 4 years, and then just left that whenever Adobe came around. And then,
4 years.
Yeah.
How fast was that?
It's a blur.
Yeah, it's
people,
crazy.
When I do podcasts and stuff, people are like, what's the biggest takeaway? And I'm like, I have a black spot for the last 4 years. Like, unless I see a piece of footage to, like, spark back, I was just like... It's all in.
Yeah. And that's that sort of 1% outcome that you want, and like you're doing something that 99 other people won't do. Nice job, dude.
Thank you.
Happy to do it, but congrats, bud.
Thanks, man. Cool. Awesome.
How do we turn the air conditioning off in here? What happened? It got fucking all shiny. We gotta tell somebody.
Bang. Thanks, dude.
Of course.
That's good.
Happy to do it. What a trip. 4 years.
Yeah.
Four fucking years.
It was just under 4 years with Gary. Yeah. And just total blur.
Was it half, how far through from did you start making videos? You said you started as a design intern.
When I worked my first 2 months, like actual inside the agency side as a designer. Yeah. And then first day on Gary's team, he was like, we need videos edited. And again, I was still like, in my mind, I'm like, okay, I'm a photographer. Now I'm a designer. Now I have to learn how to make videos.
Yep.
And just crash coursed for 6 months to figure it out. And then about a year in is when I started traveling with him. And then all over the world for 2 years. And now we're here.